welcome everybody to episode 88 of High Tech on the Low. Max, how are you this early morning for you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Awesome, awesome. It's really good to have you on the show. It's a really exciting episode. We're going to get into the world of urban agriculture and vertical farming and all the good stuff. And in the meantime, we're always going to say thank you to our sponsors, Front Team, with the 12 different communities, 6 verticals, 3,000 members all looking to connect. And as always, if you love what you're hearing, please like, subscribe, follow, and all that jazz on Spotify, Apple, and wherever else you're listening to our podcast. So Max, you know, what's really exciting for me is that I've recently kind of gotten into this craze on farming and urban agriculture in terms of my podcast. I've been into it for a while, but in terms of showing that type of stuff on my podcast, I've really only recently gotten into it. You're actually like basically the second episode ever really about this type of stuff. And it's very different than even the last one, because the last one was more of a discussion on kind of funding urban agriculture, or not even urban agriculture, I would say agricultural initiatives, innovation. And you're all about urban agriculture and vertical farming. So first of all, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to the people at home so they know a little bit more about you, what you're doing at Urban Farms, and then we'll get right into it.
All right. Yeah. So my name is Maximilian Knight. I grew up originally in Brooklyn, New York. And then after high school, I moved to Germany for a year and worked in the renewable energy industry. And then I did my engineering degree out here in Colorado, and I ended up staying. Out here, I met my co-founder, Scott Patterson. And we, before this company, we started a different company called Hydrobot, which was an automation product for us, hardware and software automation product that we launched on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was 2020.
Right on. And how did it go?
So we successfully sold about $10,000 worth of these hardware software products. And then after we did that and we shipped them out, we decided to pivot to urban farms. And the focus there was really about how do we have more impact? So Hydrobot was a product that was really focused on growing a small amount of produce, maybe in someone's garage or their living room or something like that.
Sure.
And
this one was like a scale up, basically. You guys were saying, like, how do we really make this more of an impact thing on a societal level?
Exactly. So we were just thinking, like, you know, growing produce in your garage is fun, it's cute, but it's not going to dramatically shift the sustainability of agriculture on this planet.
Right.
And that's really something that we need, right? If you consider climate change is going to make it much more difficult to grow outside. And it was never easy to grow outside anyway.
Of course. But no one's going to say it was, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, you're right. There's going to be a major change, whether it's from climate change, whether it's from, just general wars or movements of people. I mean, it's going to change.
Exactly. So, you know, we started looking into the vertical farming industry around that time. And one of the main things that we noticed was one of the big costs is labor. Mm-hmm. And this makes it really difficult for vertical farms to be profitable.
What's the labor costs right now? Are we talking like just tons of people to manage like the farms, or is it the equipment, or is it kind of everything? It's just a total mess?
Kind of everything. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example. We toured one of our competitors, Calera, about a month ago.
Okay.
And in their facility in Denver, they're growing. The total facility is probably about 80,000 square feet, but the growing floor itself is about 60,000 square feet.
Okay.
And they have about 60 full-time employees.
60 full-time employees. So they didn't really like change that much of a difference, because it sounds like almost even possibly more people than you might need for a regular farm.
Absolutely. And that's actually, you know, despite this industry kind of marketing and promoting itself as like super high tech, there's a lot of inefficiencies just in the beginning stages of this industry, because if you look at outdoor agriculture, almost everything is mechanized with tractors and various other machines.
Right. It's been that for a while too. It's not like, you know, kind of reinventing the wheel in that sense, you know.
Absolutely. Exactly. It's been like that probably since the 50s or 60s. So, you know, this industry, because everything's brand new, there's a lot of basically a huge learning curve to get to the point where we don't need as many humans to do that work and to make it economically feasible, essentially.
For sure. For sure. Now, you know, I have like a really, you know, just one thing that's gnawing at me right now is, how does a guy from Brooklyn get into farming? You know, because like the last time I heard of a farm in Brooklyn might be in the 1950s, I imagine. So, I mean, like, you know, how did you kind of get into this whole world? Was there something that was just really eating at you, or have you just kind of always been into agriculture and like you, once you got into Colorado, everything opened up for you, or what was it?
Yeah. So kind of a roundabout answer here, but when I was growing up, my parents, so my mom's German and my dad is from the US, and they met when they were in Spain.
Sure.
In the 80s, I think. And so we've always had a very international community kind of surrounding the house. And so when I was growing up, like people from all different countries would show up randomly and, you know, stay at our house for a couple of nights. And, sure. And then we would also travel. So I got to see different parts of the world. And one of the things that really impacted me about travel was just seeing like inequality, just kind of like super like in your face, just like seeing people that are suffering in one way or another. And it bothers me. And, you know, that kind of really created in me like a feeling of needing to do something with my life to help people in one way or another. And I didn't know what that was for a long time, but in high school, I heard of a book called The Vertical Farm by Dixon DePommier, who is a professor at Columbia University.
Okay.
And I actually...
I'll have to add that to my reading list now. Now I'm interested. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good book. So I did a project on him for high school, and I just took the subway up to Columbia University.
Sure.
And he was gracious enough to do an interview with a kid in high school. So that was great. And then I kind of put that down for a couple of years when I was in college.
Sure.
And I kind of forgot about it for a little bit. And then, you know, when I was finishing up college, I was looking at applying for all these jobs that I didn't really care that much about.
Sure.
And my mom mentioned like, oh yeah, what about vertical farming? You should get a job in that industry and that would be interesting. And
wow.
Of course I ended up just creating a company instead of trying to create my own job instead of getting a job.
Well, mom must be proud. At least she's getting listened to, right? You know, so that's good. That's amazing. Now, you know, I want to kind of go back, obviously, to urban farms because, you know, it's very unique what you guys are doing. And I want to get into kind of the technology, okay? And I was fortunate enough when I was back in the States to actually tour, you know, your guys' office and see what you guys are actually up to. But unfortunately, we're talking only on audio and you don't have the robot in front of you. So, you know, what are you guys actually building? Because that's, I think, one of the real questions here. And how are you guys mechanizing that whole system of vertical farming that, let's say, your competitors like Calera aren't doing?
Right. Yeah. So what we've developed is essentially a robotic system that removes basically all of the labor in the entire farming process.
So like you don't need anyone?
Well, basically the only thing that humans do is they pour seeds into a hopper.
Okay.
That needs to happen maybe every 2 weeks to a month, depending on what seeds we're planting and that sort of thing.
Sure.
Other than that, the robots do everything, including loading up the truck. So a human needs to drive the truck to wherever it's going, but everything else is done entirely by robots.
So in theory too, if there's an automatic driving truck, we don't even have humans in the mix at all, other than putting in the seeds, right? Okay, wow.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know about unloading yet, but
oh, we'll get there. I'm sure there's a startup there too.
Yeah, and I mean the customer side is a little harder to control because you don't control it in any way. So
right, but from your side of things, you're managing the entire process, basically from the moment you are planting the seed to the moment you're picking the produce and putting it, let's call it, in the truck, you're managing that whole process.
Exactly.
And it's entirely automated with a robot?
Yeah, so it's a couple of different robotic systems that basically play well with each other. So we have one robot that does all of the seeding, basically puts seeds into cubes, cuts those cubes up, puts them onto a germination tray.
Okay.
And then those basically go into a germination area slash nursery. And they spend the first 2 weeks of their life there. Once they're ready and big enough to where the density of the foliage of the plants gets to be where they're competing with each other, then we spread them out. right? So then at that point, they get put into the main hydroponic system, and then they spend the remaining 30 days of their life cycle there before they get harvested.
Nice, nice. So basically, it's like a, you know, it's a full farm in that sense. You're a full functioning, you know, basically, I could say a robot to table, you know, type of system here, right? You know, so and basically, so you're telling me the only human interaction is maybe me putting in the seeds in the hopper. What about maintenance? What about that type of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So all of our robotic arms and the motors are rated for 10,000 hours. Okay. And so, you know, we anticipate a fairly low amount of maintenance, but we do budget in our financials for a maintenance person, because at the end of the day, pipes will break, things will happen, everything's not going to be perfect all the time. So, you know, but in terms of the actual operations, it doesn't require humans, assuming everything is working.
That's incredible. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Now, where do you like assume you'll be installing, let's say, you know, obviously we're thinking down the line a little bit, right? You know, first of all, let me ask, what stage are you guys at as a startup? Have you raised? Have you not raised?
Sure. So we incorporated in 2021. And at that point, we raised $123,000 from friends and family.
Okay.
Congrats. Since then, we've done smaller amounts on SafeNotes, $11,000 in total. And now we're closing a deal with an investor, and that will allow us to fund our first facility. So right now we're operating out of a small office, like you obviously saw, but for the audience.
Sure.
We're operating out of an office where we built our prototype. And then this funding round will go to commercializing that in a commercial size facility, basically. So this will be about 4,000 square feet with 16-foot ceilings. And
nice.
You know, ideally we'd go taller than that, but this is our proof of concept, and this will, you know, basically allow us to prove the concept both on the technical side and the business side.
Okay.
And from there, we want to expand all over, initially at all over Colorado, and then across the U.S.
And can you grow anything? You know, it's not kind of like plant specific.
Yeah. So the system right now is completely capable of growing most leafy greens. And then with minor adjustment, we can grow. So we would basically need to change out the gripping mechanism on the end of the robot.
Sure.
If we're going to do strawberries or tomatoes or peppers or, you know, fruiting crops.
Basically. Right, because you can't grab it the same way as you could, let's say, a head of lettuce, right?
Yeah. Lettuce is a little more robust. It can handle a bit more force, I guess. Like a strawberry would just
right.
turn into juice.
Yeah, I imagine, right? So if you want a smoothie, it's easy. But if not, you know, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, so, you know, the kind of timeline or roadmap for that is that we're, after this first facility, once we get everything fully operational, we're probably going to have 3 to 6 months devoted towards strawberry production and harvesting robotically. Okay. And then when we raise our Series A fund, which should be in about a year, year and a half, at that point, we would start basically implementing that strawberry production on a commercial scale.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, let me ask, how have the investors taken to you guys? Because sure, friends and family, you know, is all well and good. I'm sure everyone wants to support you. I'm sure mom definitely wants to support you, right? But, you know, kind of like, how did the investors really respond? Because in my mind, right, I'll say, when I hear kind of robotic, vertical, urban agriculture, it sounds like the biggest buzzwords of any investor's wet dream. You know what I mean? This is like the future. It's automation. It's helping, you know, good stuff, right? It's helping food. It's helping agriculture. There's a lot of benefits here. How was it, though, getting them involved and really convincing them of who you guys are as a company and what you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, so it's been a process. I mean, I'd say the first probably 10 to 15 times is just kind of going through the motion and getting better at doing the actual presentation and all of that.
Sure.
And that's, you know, I mean, we've gotten really good at that, I think, at this point.
But do you ever just give them like a salad or something like that? Like, here, this I picked today or something? That could be a great idea.
Yeah, no, we've thought about that, but a lot of these are on Zoom, so.
Okay. Can't do that, I guess.
But I think, you know, it's in many ways investors are, have been really interested, but you know, getting that final yes has been somewhat difficult. And I, you know, the industry, a lot of the news in the last 3 to 6 months has been around a lot of the competitors that we have that are losing money. Some of them are, you know, slowing down or shutting down. And so that's been, you know, a difficult part of all of this, and also the overall economy just being mediocre right now. And so,
Which you can't, I guess, you're not immune to, right? At the end of the day, even though you're a food agriculture company, you know, at the end of the day, innovation still, you know, requires a certain amount of education, leadership, moving it forward, getting people to believe in it, showing that you're actually doing it. So there's kind of like a lot of, you know, factors you guys have to consider. Now, one of the things I also kind of want to see is where are you guys wanting to be? Because, you know, I've obviously heard of urban agriculture in the past. A lot of people have different ideas, you know, converting old buildings into greenhouses, you know, doing, you know, what is it like, you know, the wall farms, stuff like that, or, you know, vertical agriculture at the end of the day, and doing all sorts of different, you know, innovations to meet either new climate, you know, situations or whatever the modern world has to throw at us. What is it to, you know, your end goal here? Is it to kind of be that option of vertical farming that will now replace traditional farming? Is it going to be now something that, you know, is going to be community based for, let's say, a given apartment block structure? What's your end goal?
yeah, so I think in terms of replacing outdoor agriculture, I think that's a very, very long-term perspective if you're going to go that direction. I don't see that happening for quite a long time because there's a lot of crops that don't really make a lot of sense economically indoors at this point. And we'll see as climate change, you know, shifts how different, you know, places are suitable to grow different crops, that might change more quickly than we think. But I'd say, you know, it's not even a reasonable goal for probably 50 to 100 years.
Fair.
But you know, beyond that, I think, you know, what we really want to do is be able to create a local economy in which communities can really contribute a meaningful part of the food that they that's consumed in that community within that community. And so really like focusing on the ability of a community to kind of decouple from the globalized food systems in which, you know, something happens in the stock market or in Ukraine and
Or
suddenly
pandemic in China, you know, right.
whatever it is, right?
Sure.
Like something huge happens and suddenly the prices at the grocery store are double or triple. And, you know, those people, their jobs aren't, you know, their salaries didn't go up. Like those kind of things is really like what we're passionate about. And the long-term goal is really for these farms to be able to service an entire city. So
Okay.
basically all of the produce in terms of that you would see like normally in the grocery store, we would want to be growing that locally
And
for
when you say locally,
entire
like
city.
in an apartment building or like, you know, in a warehouse, in an office building, all over, a mix, what is that?
Yeah, it'd be warehouses primarily. And the reason for that is that they're in many cases, especially with Amazon, there's just a lot of them that are sitting empty. So there's been a lot of big box retail stores that have gone out of business, and that's a sector that in terms of real estate that we're really interested in the long term, because those spaces can be huge, like hundreds of thousands of square feet, and in that amount of space, you can grow a ton of food.
Plus, you're
Like
also using
campuses
dead
or
space in a
playgrounds.
sense, right? You know, you're using space that otherwise would be just sitting there.
Exactly. That's the idea. And you know, in that amount of space, like it's very much reasonable to consider that we could grow all of the produce in the grocery store for an entire community across like, you know, tens or 20 grocery stores, or you know, for a bigger city it'd be a lot more. But you know, the idea for a larger city would be kind of to be on the outskirts and you know, have all of the food be like within 30 to 50 miles of where it's being consumed.
So this pilot that you guys are now setting up, you know, hopefully soon, now that this investor is coming in, where is that produce going to go? Is it already kind of going to test the model?
Yeah, so that produce is going to go to a couple of different vendors that we've already set up agreements with. So,
Like local Colorado store vendors?
we're focused on going to market with a direct-to-institution model,
Okay.
where institutions meaning universities, school systems, corporate campuses.
Okay.
And the reason for this is that a lot of them have their own kitchens in-house, and
Sure.
so they're able to handle the produce in its raw form
Okay.
and like doing some of the post-processing in terms of washing and chopping
Sure.
in-house. And that just simplifies our own production process in the short term. So long term, we are going to develop automation to do that washing, chopping, and
Okay.
packaging. But in the short term, we have a lot going on. So
In the short term, let's get the pilot done first, right?
exactly.
For sure. Okay, so that's pretty amazing to see that, what you guys basically started out in like 2021, at least incorporated, and with already, basically what, like a year and a half-ish, you guys are already moving on to a major pilot. We're gonna have some institutional partners and hopefully really kind of prove the model ideally. I think that's incredible. Now, one of the things that I'm kind of interested from your perspective, because listen, you're very deep in this field, right? You're very deep in the urban agriculture field. You've been in it seems like now for, several years, and not to mention Urban Farms' own, time in the market. So where do you see urban agriculture moving to right now? What are like kind of the hot topics, if you will, that, entrepreneurs, investors, anyone who's really interested in agriculture should be looking out for?
Yeah, so I think everything that I'm seeing these days is all around how do we make these systems profitable? So if you look at the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a ton of investment in this field, but those investors are starting to get tired of the kind of message of like it'll be profitable in the future.
Sure.
And so everything really now is focused on like how do we get costs down? So a lot of that is obviously automation, but there's other aspects to it as well. One thing that we recently learned from one of our employees who used to work at Calera is that they sometimes struggle to be able to sell all of the produce that they grow. And
Interesting.
so
Okay.
one thing that, in indoor agriculture, you're basically able to know is when I plant the seed, it's going to be exactly 60 days or whatever it is, right?
Okay.
For that crop,
There's
it's
a
exactly
lot more
60
kind of
days
a
until you
formula
harvest.
there. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because everything's dialed in. And that on its face seems like a great thing for planning. But the traditional produce industry right now is really they operate in a completely different manner where they'll tell you 2 or 3 days ahead of time that they want so and so amount of product.
Okay.
And that's something that we really want to focus on in terms of like we want to create a system where those stores are rewarded for planning much further out. Because if we're not able to sell a good portion of our crop, that's going to be a major hit. And so if we can reward them giving whether it's lower prices or discounts or whatever it is, for thinking like 2 or 3 months out, then that can be a huge thing for the industry. And then the other big thing that I think, there's not a silver bullet to this, but is energy. Energy like for running the lights and the
Right.
HVAC systems in these farms is a large amount. And that's something that is going to be, I think, a long-term challenge that no one is able to easily figure out.
Sure.
Obviously there's a lot of innovation going on in different parts of the energy sector in terms of nuclear and all of the renewables and stuff, but those changes take a long time,
Sure.
and that impacts our industry significantly because if you look at the cost of goods for most indoor farms, that's probably a third to a half of the cost.
I imagine, because at the end of the day, what's a problem with indoor farming? You don't have the sun, right? You're not using the biggest source of renewable energy that's just naturally present in the ecosystem. And not only that, I think there's something to be said about just general energy use in this world, right? Because as you also mentioned, the trucks and this and that and the next thing, there's a lot of stuff surrounding agriculture that you know, is more than just like where you're growing it, right? But that makes a ton of sense. And, you know, what I also love is kind of this, you know, it seems like you really have this passion here for kind of food justice, right? Because you're wanting to incentivize for people to kind of plan their growing schedule, you know, and know, okay, this is what I'm going to use. This is how much I'm going to use. And I'm not, you know, using any less or more. And if I am, maybe it's, you know, very marginal and not going to have a major impact, or I could, you know, compost it for all I know, right? And just bring it back. So that's amazing. You know, we're getting towards the end of the podcast, and I want to ask just, you know, one kind of summarizing question, which is, you know, you've been in this business now since basically Hyderabad, but now at least for the last year and a half, and you've kind of been able to survive a pandemic, you're getting investors, you're setting up your pilot, things seem to be looking up for you. What is your one major piece of advice for all entrepreneurs out there right now? And what should they be doing to help, you know, grow their startups?
Yeah, I'd say fundraising has been one of the biggest challenges for us. You know, on the tech side, we're very strong and we figure things out in a, you know, creative and unique way. But on the fundraising side, the advice I would give to people is just start talking to investors before you think you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
Like, start having those conversations. You're not necessarily asking them for money, but you're just telling them about what you're doing, because in building that trust, at the end of the day, like, it's a relationship, and they're not just going to give you money, right? They're partners. They're going to be with you for the whole journey. And so, you know, I think that's a mistake that we made is really, like, you know, we were like so focused on our pitch deck and all these little like details. And it's like, at the end of the day, like, you need to just start talking to people, because if, you know, unless you're super well connected from the start, it's going to take a while to get things rolling.
Right. Right. I get what you mean. It's kind of like, you know, you can plan as much as you want, but at the end of the day, go out and do it. Right. So, so it makes sense. Right. Well, listen, Max, this has been a really fascinating conversation, and I wish you guys the best at Urban Farms. You're going to have to keep us posted so I know where you guys are at in the future, if we have to do a follow-up episode, because it sounds like we will be. And really just, you know, congratulations with everything. I wish you guys the best.
Thank you, Jordan.